Hello and welcome to the show. It's that time of the week where comedians with football opinions are given free rein to express them. And you never know, some of them might be right. If Steve Cooper can get a contract extension at Nottingham Forest, anything is possible. So let the magic happen, because the football's on. Yes, another fine week of domestic football, and I don't know about you, I can't wait for it to all end so I can watch Cameroon against Serbia on a Monday morning in November. But enough of that. This week we'll be talking Haaland, obviously, Ronaldo, and whether Liverpool are just knackered. And we'll be getting the gen on the pen as we get into penalty kicks and the taking thereof. But as I said, it's a show for comics, so in true Comedy Club style, strap in for the comedy stylings of a man with style, Ian Moore. And please put your hands together for the finest thing from around the A40, other than the Hoover Building, Nathan Caton. Morning.
What's going on?
Ian, nice to see you guys. Ian, what have you noticed this week?
Well, I know I'm kind of obsessed with kits, but the Spurs second kit was actually clashed with the Brighton first kit, so I didn't understand that decision. And also the yellow socks, it made it look like they were a hockey team rather than a football team, like they'd forgotten their kit or something and just had to scrabble around for whatever was available. But the Liverpool kit as well, those kind of hypnotic swirls, it's no wonder they're struggling at the moment. It was like Car out of the Jungle Book, just hypnotising each other. Terrible, terrible kid.
How do you think Klopp does his team talk, just going, trust in me.
Come to me.
Nathan, what about you? What have you noticed?
I have noticed just how far fans will go to defend their team. Like, there's bias and then it's just been ridiculous. It's got to the point now where Liverpool fans genuinely think not being good at defending still makes you a good defender. Like, the clue is in the name.
Yes. Well, we're talking about Trent, right? And obviously he was given a torrid time by Gabriel Martinelli. And he isn't particularly good at defending, but he is very, very good going forward. Is that not enough?
No, he's a defender. The defender. Yeah, like, if he's not a right midfielder, he's a defender. So you defend for, like, it's got so bad. Like, when he's defending, I almost forget what the AA stands for. Is it Alexander Arnold or always absent? Where are you, bruv? Defend.
Ow. Ow.
Very hard.
Alexander Arnold, have that. Well, let's talk about that. Arsenal continued their fine start to the season at the Emirates with a 3-2 win over Liverpool. We talked about Arsenal last week, and while I'd be very happy to continue that chat throughout the season, it was felt by the rest of the production team who don't support Arsenal that Liverpool's terrible start to the season might be more newsworthy. The Reds are now 14 points behind Arsenal and 13 behind Man City, albeit with a game in hand. Nathan, I can't see Man City dropping 13 points ever again. Now, that being the case, is this the beginning of the end for Klopp at Anfield?
I don't know if it's the beginning of the end, but, I mean, Klopp has, like, he's got a knack of, like, every club he's been to, he gets off to a flyer, they're successful, and then they hit a wall, and then he kind of, like, moves on. So, I don't know. I personally think he'll have to rebuild and get through this, but it is kind of like history repeating itself with Klopp.
That is true. I mean, is it the constant pressing, Ian? Are they just tired of heavy metal football? They need a bit of light jazz, perhaps, some show tunes, maybe?
a bit of scat down the wings. I think there's something in what Nathan said. I think there is that about Klopp. If he's a really good manager, and I think he is a really good manager, then he has to prove it this time by building a second good team. I think there's a kind of crisis of confidence in the team, because towards the end of last season, whenever Thiago was out, Liverpool just could not score. They needed Thiago in the side. So they're kind of building that team around Thiago, who's quite fragile. And I think, genuinely, that Trent Alexander, he should be playing in the middle. He should be a midfielder. I think, and I'm not just saying this to, you know, for controversy, I think he could be England's Pirlo. He's got a lot of vision. He's got a wonderful passing ability. So stick him where, you know, he actually does damage the other side.
Yeah. I think there's something in that. It's weird. I don't know if you boys had this. Nathan, I was at the game on Sunday, And there's certain Liverpool players that I absolutely love. Thiago is one. Trent Alexander-Arnold is another. But apparently you shouldn't voice these things when they're playing against your team.
yeah, that kind of helps.
Always a lovely footballer. Oh, isn't he good? And then they go, shut up, Stoney.
Anybody who's married knows you shouldn't do that. You don't sit and look at the television and go, well, oh, yeah. Do you know, I really like Uma Thurman. You don't say things like that.
My missus is not playing against Uma Thurman, though, I should point out. It's all not right, all Uma right, Thurman is not trying to stop her playing. But I understand the point you're making. Nathan, do you think it was a bit much? I mean, you know, we were talking about Thiago there. I absolutely love watching him. What a player. They've got some great players at Liverpool.
I mean, yes, they've got some great players. But I mean, like, okay, when Arsenal's second goal went in, when Trent ran past the ball, I mean, then you may have had a good point. Like, see, I told you he's good. He's a great player. Because I don't want to sound like I'm jumping on the Trent bashing bandwagon, but I'm going to do it. Where was he going? Like, it was obvious Martinelli was going to cut inside, and it's like he ran to take a throw in. Mate, the ball's back towards a goal. Virgil van Dijk must be looking at Trent thinking, thank you. Because Virgil hasn't been great this season, but because Trent's defending has been so bad, we kind of forgot that Virgil hasn't been that good.
That's true. He hasn't been that good. He doesn't look the colossus he used to look like. What about Darwin? Oh, go on.
I was just thinking about Virgil van Dijk, that he missed the Euros, didn't he, because he was injured. Is he saving himself for the World Cup?
Aren't we all, Ian?
To be right. Fair. I've ordered cases of wine.
You do that anyway, wouldn't you, to be fair?
Oh, yeah, any excuse.
I've decided not to cheer. Oh, have you? You're ready, are
yeah,
you?
Oh, yeah, okay. Qatari, Ecuador. Oh, what a banger to start the tournament.
Tunisia against Australia at 10 a.m. on a Tuesday. Oh, I'm getting up for that one. Yeah, I mean, I know what you mean about Virgil van Dijk, Nathan. He's still an absolutely fantastic player. But everyone looks a little bit more under pressure at Liverpool at the moment. They've obviously performed at such a high level, and then it all kicked off over I don't know what. And you know what was amazing? Granit Xhaka seemed to be like calming things down a little bit.
Oh, do you remember last time I was on, I made a prediction that Granit Xhaka would get less than 5 yellow cards. I was being sarcastic, but you know what? I might be up to something, you know?
He's on a bonus.
Very, very early days.
It is. He's on a bonus. One more thing before we move on. Darwin Núñez, I don't know if you saw this, he did some celebration when he scored the goal, the equaliser for Liverpool, and he was doing this thing when he was like crying like and taunting the Arsenal fans. I'm not so sure you should do that unless you're 4-1 up, Ian.
I don't understand anybody's celebrations anymore. Just going up to the opposition fans and pretending to cry after you've scored. What is this? The death scene from Camille? Just get on with the game. I don't understand it.
That's the fourth time the death scene from Camille has been mentioned on this show in the last couple of weeks. Frankly, I'm sick of it. Anyway, it was Everton 1, Manchester United 2 at Goodison live on BT Sport on Sunday evening as United bounced back from their mauling at the Etihad. And it was inevitably Cristiano Ronaldo who scored the winner and his 700th club goal. Ian, we're three comedians, so we can hardly criticise someone for wanting to be the centre of attention. But Cristiano Ronaldo is another level, isn't he? I mean, 700 goals. Erling Haaland might not equal that figure until the middle of next season.
Do you know what? It's interesting about that Ronaldo thing is how muted his response was, which I think shows how much it actually meant to him. Because normally, if he'd score a penalty, he'd go pirouetting off into the corner. And yet there, he's just kind of, you know, running sort of gently to the corner flag. It was quite an odd response. Very mature response.
Very mature. That's what they always say about Cristiano.
No,
very
no, mature. No crying in front of the Everton fans. None of that.
You know what? That's a fair point. No, there was something. There was, you know, when you do a really good gag, though, and you know how good it is, and the audience are loving it, and you're just going, yeah, I know how good I am. That's a nice moment, right?
That's the point I run off the stage and pirouette into the audience.
Point at the name on the back of your suit. Do you know what? You should get that name on the back of your suit. As for Man United, Nathan, I mean, it is hard to work out how good they are. You know, the fans have criticised some of the players for not having Manchester United DNA. Does Fred need to take a DNA test? Is it possible that Ericsson has mainly Tottenham DNA with just a smidgen of Brentford as well?
He'll all have Brentford in his heart. Come back home. Yeah. You know where you belong, Christian.
Even though you booed him.
Yeah. Tough love, okay? That's what my grandma did to me. Love, right? I turned out fine.
I don't think you should talk about what's in his heart, Nathan. I think that's he's probably had enough tests
on that. That is a fair point. That is a fair point. As long as it's working, that's the main thing, isn't it? But this Man United DNA nonsense. I mean, any club, I don't really know what that means. Maybe Arsene Wenger has Arsenal DNA, but after that, I don't know. Ian, what about Everton? I've always had a soft spot for them, really. Goodison is a grand old stadium. Any team that runs out to the Zed Cars theme tune can't be all bad.
I quite like Everton as well. And I like Lampard. I've got this thing about young managers at the moment. I want to see them do well. I just think I really like the idea. Like, Arteta's doing well. Graham Potter's doing well. I'd like to see Lampard do well. But I just... There's also something quite dour about Everton that doesn't excite, if you see what I mean. There's very little... There's no real flair there. There's no real flair with Man United, I don't think, either, at the moment. And apart from Rashford. That goal, I don't understand how that is handball, but the handball in the penalty area against Liverpool from Arsenal was not handball. When is a handball not handball? They're both accidental. Well, they're both handball.
Can I just correct you there, Ian, and say that the one against Liverpool hit Gabriel's chest first, just as a slight brush on his chest.
But then it went on to his hand.
The one against Rashford popped up on his leg.
Yeah.
Yes, but that led directly to a goal. Listen, I can't quote the rules at you.
Oh. Funny how the Arsenal decision is the right one, isn't it, Ian?
Yeah.
It is funny, Nathan.
I don't know. I don't know. I think VAR's depressed. I just think VAR now is sitting in a pub before a match going, I don't want to do this. He's having a couple of sherbets too many and just making it up as he goes along now.
You know, we said that we got a soft spot for Everton. Is that because we genuinely like Everton or just because Liverpool fans are just like really tedious and annoying? It's kind of like we love Canada. Do we love Canada or do we just really dislike America?
Yeah, it's the same with New Zealand. I think there's something in that, actually. His name is Nathan Caton, ladies and gentlemen. Yeah. Nathan Caton, C-A-T-O-N.
I disassociate myself from all of that. I love Liverpool. Yeah,
the football's on and BT Sport do not associate with those views, okay? Anyway, talking of people getting involved, Diego Costa returned to Chelsea with Wolves to a wonderful reception as the whole ground rose to acclaim their returning hero. Nathan, if Chelsea really wanted to give him a proper Diego Costa reception, they should have kicked him repeatedly until he reacted and got sent off. Do you not think he would have appreciated the irony?
Oh, guys, it's so touching. Yeah, he would have loved that. But I mean, how old is Diego Costa now, by the way? Because
he's 34. He looks older.
Man, when he was 22 playing for Chelsea, he looked like 57.
Yeah, he did, yeah. Yeah, it all that living is etched on his face, isn't it? All that anger. It's absolutely fantastic. I mean, Ian, Costa said that he never had a problem with the fans, just with one manager. I mean, we think he was talking about Antonio Conte, but this being Chelsea, that still leaves around 15 candidates, as far as I can tell.
There's something about Costa. I think every tackle he's ever made is etched onto his face. He looks, every tackle he's ever made creates a scar on his cheek, and I love that about him. But I don't understand this career move at all. Unless Wolves, what they're doing, they're playing a kind of Portuguese monopoly. And every footballer who now speaks Portuguese has to come via Wolves.
It's true. Every fan gets handed one of those little custard cakes. It's really nice, actually. I mean, it's true what you say. All the slights and scars do seem to be etched on his face. He hoards them. Nathan, you can imagine if someone cut him up in his car in 2009, he'd still remember the number plate.
Have you seen that Michael Jordan Chicago Bulls documentary? He goes, to be personally.
Amazing. amazing.
That's Diego Costa is like the footballing equivalent. It's like, whatever it is, I took it personally. I will not forget.
Yeah. Oh, at the end of that pickup game they play, when it's basically the most famous basketball game in the world, and they go, we shouldn't have annoyed the guy, should we? That absolutely fantastic moments. Costa's other famous comments include the now infamous, if my mother was on the pitch and I had to beat her, I would. I mean, would he though, Ian? When faced with your mum at a corner, could you really shove her out the way to get to the ball?
It depends. I mean, you look at Costa and you think his mum is probably terrifying and could probably beat him. you just don't know. It'd be a fight for the ages, wouldn't it? Godzilla versus Mothman or whatever it's called. It'd be a terrifying matchup, and I hate that phrase matchup. Everybody's using that phrase matchup now. It's just, you know, just yes. Somebody's invented that sentence, and now everybody has to say it. So I don't know why I said it. Well, I'm annoyed with myself.
I was going to say you hate the phrase. You're the one who mentioned it. He also said to John Terry, I go to war, you come with me. I mean, Nathan, that sounds like an Arnie line in the Terminator films.
Yeah, it sounds like, dude, calm down. It's just a game of football, mate. We're getting paid for this. Relax.
Could you imagine anyone saying that to Diego Costa? I mean, he's prepared to take out his mother. Imagine what he'd do just to a teammate. Welcome back to the Football Zone with Nathan Caton, Ian Moore and me, Ian Stone. Now, I'm sure that Nathan knows this, but news reaches us that Romeo Beckham, son of Britain's Curator-in-Chief David, is currently training with the Brentford B team. Yes, young Mr. B is training with the B's Bees. Nathan.
Yes.
If he lost his man at a corner, would it not be tempting, some would say compulsory, to say, wherefore art thou, Romeo?
I thought you were going to say bend it like Beckham, but that's a better one. So.
That's a different one. We could do that as well. But you know, it must be hard, don't you think? Or would after the 19th time, you go, all right, sorry, I'll try and mark more carefully.
Well, first of all, I just want to say it is so refreshing to finally see Brentford getting the glamour that they deserve. All right, listen, forget all the money that Man City and Chelsea etc. can offer you. If you love Kew Gardens, you know where to come. Okay, if you like picking flowers on your day off, come to TW8. That's the pitch.
It's true. And that walk under the M4 flyover is just so beautiful, isn't it? Really, you really are communing with nature.
Yeah.
Ian, it can't be easy being David Beckham's son. On the other hand, it must be very easy being David Beckham's son.
Yeah, I think I'd go with the latter. I think it's really easy being David Beckham's son. I, you know, there's not a lot of pressure, really, is there? And also, no offence to Nathan and the beauty that is the TWA area. He's playing for Brentford B team. It's not like you're Jordi Cruyff and you're walking out of Manchester United and everybody's going, he's not his dad, is he? You know, it's a different kind of pressure.
Whoa. Oh, listen, it is not easy to perform on those rocky pitches at Yedding.
Could Johan have done it on a wet Tuesday in Yedding? You're absolutely right.
Can anyone, frankly? Romeo, as Ian alluded to there, Romeo is, of course, not the first son of a famous footballing dad to play at a reasonable level. I was thinking of Jordi Cruyff trying to live up to his dad, Johan, and Kasper Schmeichel trying to outdo his dad, Pete, just to give a couple of examples, such high achievers. Ian, do your kids have a similar problem when it comes to how they dress? I mean, I imagine sweatpants are a no-no in the Moore household.
Well, the thing is, you see, my elder son is now living in the UK and he's taken most of my suits with him. And I didn't know
he'd seen
my suits. Absolutely outrageous. it's me who's under pressure now. I'm going to be scrabbling about for sweatpants in the morning myself. It's not...
Competitive dressing.
It is very competitive round here. I can tell you that much. And I won't let it go. I'm not going to slip quietly into the darkness. I'm going to outdress him every time we go anywhere.
Ian, Anyone who's ever met you didn't need to hear that last sentence. Ian Moore won't let it go. Okay. Another example of a high-achieving son outdoing his dad is, of course, Erling Haaland at Manchester City. The stats are ridiculous. Here's our weekly crazy Haaland stat. He's currently outscoring all but six teams in the Premier League. Now, obviously, I haven't included Manchester City because you can't outscore your own team. Although, if anyone could, Haaland could. Although it should also be noted, though, that he only scored one goal at the weekend. Keep your eyes on the prize, Erling. We hear, Nathan, that Haaland Jr. is on £865,000 per week, including bonuses, goals, wins, trophies, keeping your locker area clean, stuff like that. But, and I know the answer to this, is he worth it, Nathan?
Oh, I don't know. And during this cost of living crisis, of course he's worth it, mate.
Yeah.
Listen, if he carries on at the rate he's going, like, he's going to make Elon Musk look broke. Yeah, he's
yes,
on fire.
Yes. Yeah, I would like Erling Haaland to own Twitter, actually, now I think about it. I think he would be a very calming influence. Ian, what would you give bonuses for at your club? I mean, players neatly attired, boots polished, stuff like that?
Boots definitely polished. Sensible haircuts. Yes. No visible tattoos. proper old-fashioned stuff. Proper old black boots. Black boots, bring back black boots. But you're asking there, is Haaland worth it? He's only worth it if they win the Champions League, because they're already champions. So, you know, for them to be champions again and still spend £1 million a week while he racks up the records, that's all well and good. But unless they win the Champions League, is he worth it? Because he hasn't improved them on a stage where they want to be improved.
It is true. When they did the parade a couple of years ago, and they were parade, like the League Cup, and all the whole, there's like 200,000 people going, yeah, we've seen that. Yeah, all right, it's excellent, everything. We don't care. I should say this again. I do say this on a weekly basis. He does seem to be a very nice young man. I mean, we all saw the video of him picking up the referee's foam spray. Nathan, I know this is an awkward question, but if your daughter brought him home, would you be welcoming... have my chair, Erling.
I would feel very vulnerable, like I'm no longer the man of the house.
You know, you're not. Not with Erling about. Where do you want me to sit, Erling?
Yeah, on your lap.
You go right ahead. Make as much noise as you want.
Oh, God.
I mean, sorry, Nathan. Sorry.
If my future daughter ends up watching this, I'm so sorry, baby.
It's a little traumatising. All right, let's move on. Who wants a bit of fun? Well, aside from me and other gooners who are obviously sorted for fun, it's an elusive concept unless you watch Wrexham. Yes, a lot of fun is being had in North Wales, which is not a sentence you get to say that often. Owned by Hollywood royalty, currently riding high in second place in the National League, and 7-5 winners over Barnet at the weekend. Ian, that score would have definitely been one of the ones where the video printer printed out in letters as well as numbers, right?
Yeah, it would all have been spelt out for them. It's a wonderful story, isn't it? But you can't help thinking that, you know, with a Hollywood royalty involved, that it's a bit like when Madonna went hoovering up children around the third world. They've seen pain and anguish and poverty and gone, well, we'll adopt them. And you just hope that they stay with it, you know, rather than just abandon them later on down the line. It's all very fraught.
What, if the results with the children get worse? Yeah. They just go, oh, I can't be bothered now.
Find some different
children. Yeah, yeah, that's how it works. Obviously, the Hollywood money would help. I mean, we do know that. Nathan, I genuinely can't wait for the day when Ryan Reynolds is asked in an interview why he agreed to Deadpool 7, and he says, well, we needed a new striker and some cover at left back.
The squads are just funded by Deadpool. That would be great. Sponsors, just the Deadpool logo on the shirts.
Why not, though? Why not? Obviously, it gets the area going and the fans are excited. You can see what's going on down there.
Can you imagine?
I mean, obviously...
Can you imagine that the new kit is just the Deadpool outfit?
Yeah. That's true. I can't see who's taking the corners through the mask. Yeah, that's not really helpful. But I do like what's going on down there. And it's obviously the football is unbelievably exciting. 7-5. Check it out live on BT Sport. Now, while Erling Haaland tries to find a way to spend almost £1 million a week, players in the National League are on considerably less. Adam Rooney was making about £4,000 a week when signed for Salford, but most are raking around £2,000, which would enable you to have a couple of bedrooms and a small garden in Zone 5 in London. There were some people even lower down who spent serious money. When he owned the club a few years ago, Glenn Tamplin at Billericay Town in Tier 7 was paying players a couple of grand a week. Ian, I imagine that in Billericay on that sort of money, you could own one of the larger estates.
You could own one of those Essex amusement halls, couldn't you, and try and double your money. I didn't realise it was that much money at that level. I think that's, you know, that's quite good because you're basically probably part time as well while you're stacking shelves in Tesco's. So you know you supplement your income. I don't think that's bad money for Tier 7.
No, I don't either. I mean, it was unusual for Tier 7. At the time, Glenn Tamplin's Wikipedia page said that he was the second most powerful person in Essex. Can you guess? I know, I absolutely love that stat. Nathan, can you guess who the others were in the top three?
Someone from Towie. I don't know what their names are. I just know that...
No, but good effort, though.
Who else?
Ian, any guesses?
The girl who was in Holiday on Ice.
Well, it was Priti Patel, but you're close.
Okay. Next season, sorry, I'll let that slip. That's some showbiz secret I've been hanging on to.
The other most powerful person, number one most powerful person in Essex, was Lord Sugar, apparently. It's obvious when you you hear it.
Still low rent.
If this hour of nonsense... Sorry?
It's still low rent. But I mean, if you're going to have like a coronation of the most powerful person in Essex, and it's Lord Sugar, that is low rent.
Well, we'll do a different county next week. We'll see if we can find someone a bit more highbrow. Now, if this hour of nonsense is to your liking, you can follow us on social media. Twitter is at ThisIsTFO, and Instagram, The Football's On. Come and say hello and keep it polite. Let's have a game of Who Am I? I give out some clues and our guests have to guess who I'm talking about. I played for both Arsenal and Liverpool during my 14 years in English football. I'm currently an assistant coach at a Premier League club and I won the Africa Cup of Nations in 2015. Ian, any thoughts as to who this might be? Oh, you sound confident. I like the way he jumped in there. What have you got for us, Ian?
It's Kolo Touré.
It is indeed Kolo Touré. Would you have got that one, Nathan?
Hold on. How did Ian jump in before me? What's going on here?
Blackburn comes before Brentford in the alphabet, Nathan. Well, it's a simple thing.
Anyway, it was... Kolo Touré. We had some additional clues, but I figured you wouldn't need it. His brother also won the AFCON in 2015, and he was part of Arsenal's invincible squad, winning the Premier League in 2003-2004. And when he trained up, when he turned up for a training session, Arsene Wenger was playing, and he took Arsene Wenger out with a tackle. The rest of the team found it very funny. Wenger had to be helped off the pitch, but he signed him. Kolo was really worried. Oh, have I upset Mr. Wenger? But he went, I like that in a defender. Bless him. Good old Kolo. We love Kolo. Yeah. That's right. Imagine punching the bloke in the face. Why do you want this job? Duh, have that. Anyway, while we're on the subject of Arsenal, this got us thinking about some of the strange and self-indulgent techniques we've seen used for penalties. Ian, you are a Francophile. Indeed, you are now actually French. We'll start with... Robert Pires and Thierry Henry. Arsenal got a penalty against Manchester City. Pires decided he wanted to do something a bit different. He was going to roll the ball under his boot to Thierry Henry and Henry was going to stick it in. But unfortunately, he barely touched the ball. Henry couldn't take the penalty and someone ran over and cleared it. And then Danny Mills gave them an earful. And Arsene Wenger, apparently, Ian, was not happy with him.
Well, I'm not surprised. What? This is that. You're on the pitch to score a goal. You have the easiest opportunity to score a goal. And you're fannying about with, in the same way that you're probably sitting there during training and go, all right, well, we've run out of celebrations. Let's do something really stupid with a penalty kick now. It's disrespectful. That's where I'm going. I'm going old school player. That's disrespectful to the opposition.
Yes.
I don't know if it is or not,
when
but it feels like it.
Yeah, no, I agree. But when it's disrespecting Danny Mills, I'm okay with that. I'll be totally honest with you. Nathan, what about the Panenka? What about the Panenka? It's great when it works, embarrassing when it doesn't. Sort of like stand-up comedy.
Have you been to my last gig, mate? Hey, check out this new material. 20 minutes later. I hate you all. I hate you.
Yeah, I can imagine it, though. I absolutely can imagine it. It doesn't usually take me 20 minutes. But you know what I mean? The thing is, in the end, you're just essentially chipping it back into the goalkeeper's arms if they just stand still.
It's one of those things, like, if it comes off, it's great. But if not, it's you look like a clown. It's like Berbatov. He used to take those really lazy run-ups. And if he scored, it looked classy. But if he didn't, it was like, mate, what the hell are you doing?
He usually did score, though, didn't he? That's, to be fair, to Berbatov. I mean, yeah. the one I remember was Pirlo in the Euros when Joe Hart was basically jumping about too much. I genuinely think, Ian, that was the beginning of the end of Joe Hart's top-level career. I think Pirlo made him look so foolish.
He got the fear after that, didn't he? He got what they call the yips.
I think he did.
I just think with penalties is that, you know, in theory, you shouldn't miss a penalty, okay? But people miss penalties. So if there's a chance that you might miss a penalty, look like you really care. Just whack it as hard as you can. You know, don't do anything fancy that people look afterwards and go, what were you doing? You know, at least whacking it as hard as you can means that you're really trying to take the goalkeeper out, even if he gets behind it.
Unless you're Yapstein.
I mean, Ian, Yapstam used to do that. Well, I'll ask the both of you then. I mean, Ian, I don't know about you, but I need to see a run-up. I don't like it when they just take one step.
Yeah. No. One step, again, it's another one. It's like, well, you know, I'm not giving the goalkeeper time to think. You're not giving yourself time to think either. You know, I like to see a run-up that's halfway between the penalty spot and the penalty area line.
No, like Michael Holden.
Yeah, no more, no less. That's all I want to see. That, you know, don't muck about. That should actually be a rule. You've got to take a certain specific number of steps. If the goalkeeper's not allowed off their line, you have to take a specific number of steps to approach the ball as well.
You should take a run up like you're getting ready to do the high jump at the Olympics. You start going.
Well, how would you do it, Nathan? I'm assuming you'd blast it. Would you blast it?
Yeah,
maybe.
Just hitting hard.
Give it a wallop.
Hit it hard. If you get in the way, tough luck.
Yeah. Okay. Tough luck. The truth is, if you get in the way, you might save it. What about the hop, skip and jump? What about the hop, skip and jump, Nathan? Do you like that one? Zaza for Italy.
A bit of trickery, yeah.
Again, is that... That's the Jorginho one, though, isn't it? Which worked for a while, hasn't worked so well recent times. Again, you know, you just look a fool. You just look like you're skipping towards the ball with no real intent.
So, Bournemouth's new owner, Bill Foley, played £150 million for his new club and Watson beat Leicester 2-1 at the weekend. If Foley passes the fit and proper test, and short of invading a country, it's hard to see how he can't, he'll take the number of American owners of Premier League clubs up to 10. Nathan, where does this leave the game in, say, 50 years' time? Will there be half-time entertainment? Will there be four quarters and an at-seat drink service?
Oh, man, yeah, hot dogs and popcorn. Who has popcorn at a football match?
They all do during the Carabao Cup. Carabao Cup is all that's a lot. You know, the ones who watch the game through the iPad while the game's going on in front of them. Then,
well, there was talk about like having like an all-star game in it in the Premier League. Which,
yes,
I'll be honest, I'm not against it because I'm a big basketball fan. So the all-star weekend, I'm into that. It could work in the Premier League. I'm not Okay, I know I said that we like Canada, I don't like America, but I'll take that idea and run with it.
Yeah, okay. No. I mean, Ian, I might be wrong. I might be wrong, but I sense the growing Americanization of pretty much anything is not to your taste.
I don't mind it in certain aspects, but I just don't like it in sport. The thing about when the American owners come over to something like the Premier League is that they are coming from a sport which is only played really internally in a country. They don't have necessarily international competitions. So they start looking at it by going, like, for instance, Nathan says, the All-Star match, which is just never going to happen because clubs aren't going to... They're not going to loan out Erling Haaland for an All-Star match, are they? The chances of him getting injured are strong, and then he's lost to that club. So it's never going to happen. You know, I mean, if you're going to Americanize it, just keep it simple. Have Cyndi Lauper play at every half-time interval and have those big foam pointy fingers things, and let's just leave it at that. There's no need to go further.
Cyndi Lauper, foam pointy fingers, and you're sorted.
Yeah.
Simple. Nathan, your owner at Brentford is Matthew Benham. Mm. It's actually quite hard to find too much information about him. On the Sports Grail website, he's described in the most spectacularly terrible English I've heard in quite some time as having done an outstanding job to make the air of mystery that is surrounded by both him and his reputation.
Yeah.
I mean, I just absolutely love that sentence. I still don't fully understand it. Is the mystery surrounded by him?
It's just a fancy way. It's just a fancy way of saying, mind your business, leave us alone.
Yeah, I get that. I mean, I get that. I mean, I know he made his money through derivatives and then he had a sort of money ball system. But the thing is, Nathan, and I put this to you as you're on the show this week, it's hard to get worked up about Brentford. The ground's too new, hidden under a flyover. There's not a lot to hold on to. If you asked any non-Brentford fan who Brentford's most famous players were, they'd say the 11 who are playing now and they could name two of them. What I'm saying is, what even is a Brentford?
Mate, what are you, like a closet QPR fan or something? What the hell's going on? All right. I love QPR and Fulham Stone.
I'm just asking the question because it's hard from an outside point of view to get worked up. Sell your club to me, Brentford.
It feels like an insult hidden in a question, to be honest.
I was not that well hidden, to be honest.
We're a smaller club who are, you know, punching well above our weight, and you know,
you are.
We'll keep it as that. You know what I mean? You don't need to know everything about us, okay? You'll find out when you lose at a G-Tech Brentford Community Stadium, whatever you want to call it.
Like the perfect owner, this Benham, though. I mean, he's doing extremely well creating an air of mystery about what is a Brentford. They seem like a match made in heaven.
Well, there is something a little bit mysterious about him, but obviously the way that they've recruited is absolutely amazing, and they've established themselves as a very, very solid Premier League club. I am backtracking here, Nathan, because I don't want to upset the guests when they come on. But and yeah, like you say, the insult wasn't particularly well hidden at all. But there are a number of clubs that it's hard to get worked up about, don't you think? Nottingham Forest, Villa. Blackburn, it's another one.
Listen, don't start knocking us. We're one of the original founders, mate. Brentford are about 3 days old compared to us. Carbon dated.
Fighting amongst themselves now.
I do have this slight problem with Midlands and East Midlands clubs that I find it difficult to get worked up about. Birmingham, Villa, Wolves, Leicester or Forest. And if they're kind of playing each other, that's great because I know I can take a night off from watching the football because I have literally nothing that makes me want to watch it. So in that respect, I quite need them. But in a marital sense, I quite need clubs like that and fixtures like that so that my wife can actually get on the telly herself.
See what I mean, Nathan? It's just there should be a top six, and then you know you'd have your own little league going on. Anyway, it's time for Call Yourself a Fan, the quiz where comics vie to see who can display their football knowledge, and the nation looks on with a mixture of pity and disdain. The league table so far, Nathan sitting very proudly at the top. joint top. As I was mean about his team, Nathan can go first. You ready, Nathan?
Okay, let's try this.
All right. Out of these Brentford players, who is the highest rated on FIFA 23? Is it Matthias Jensen, David Raya, or Brian Mbeumo?
Gosh. I'm going to go for Brian Mbeumo.
No, it's David Raya, mate.
Damn, I was going to say that.
76.
Former Blackburn
surprisingly,
goalkeeper.
Yeah, is that right? Yes, that's
yeah.
right. Cheers.
Yeah.
Surprisingly, Ivan Toney is not the club's highest rated player. Defender Ben Mee and the keeper Thomas Strakosha, joint top at 78. Question two, Nathan. Griffin Park was Brentford FC's home for 116 years. Mm. But what was the club stadium before Griffin Park called? Was it Kew Road, York Road, or Church Road?
Or what, sorry? Was the last one?
Church Road.
Church
Hugh
Road.
Kew Road, York Road, or Church Road?
I'm going to guess Church Road.
No, and wrong again, Nathan. It is York Road.
Gosh.
The Bees played at York Road from 1900 to 1904. I was only a small child then, but I do remember them moving to Griffin Park. Question three, null out of two so far, Nathan.
Okay.
Which of these current Brentford players has the most appearances for the club? Is it Sergi Canos, Josh De Silva, or Rico Henry?
That's a tricky one, because Sergi's been there for longer, but he's been injured for a lot as well. It's like Sergi or Rico. The most appearances, Sergi Canos.
He's got it right. Well done. He's so
well done.
Pleased about it. Sergi,
well
that was... Do you know what? I was nervous for you there, I'll be honest with you. Sergi Canos has played on 244 occasions for Brentford. He has the most appearances in the current squad. Right, a couple of questions on this weekend's Premier League action, Nathan.
No.
In Sunday's Premier League fixtures, how many teams failed to score? Was it 4, 2 or none?
Oh my gosh, okay, what was the games first? So, Palace Leeds, okay, West Ham Fulham, Arsenal, none.
None. It is none. Oh. All eight teams that played on Sunday found the back of the net, and it was Trent Alexander-Arnold's fault for all of those goals. 2 out of 4. The final question. The first Premier League goal this weekend was scored by Leicester City away at Bournemouth. Who scored it? Was it Harvey Barnes, Kelechi Iheanacho, or Patson Daka?
Patson Daka.
It was. Patson Daka made it 1-0 in the 10th minute. 2 second-half goals from Bournemouth meant that the home side took all 3 points. Nathan, you know what? You started badly, but picked it up very nicely at the end. 3 points. Now it's the turn of Ian Moore. Okay, Ian, 3 about Blackburn and 2 about the Premier League. Out of these Blackburn players, who is the highest rated on FIFA 23? Is it A, Lewis Travis, B, Bradley Dack, or C, John Buckley?
Well, he hasn't played much in the last two seasons, but he would be the superior player. I'd say Bradley Dack.
No, it is Lewis Travis, 73 rated. Ben Brereton Diaz is the only player at the club with a higher rating of 75. In December 2001... Blackburn Rovers bought Andy Cole from Manchester United for £8 million, which is about 6 weeks' earnings for Erling Haaland, becoming their record signing. Who, Ian, in 2012 equaled Cole's transfer fee and is now the club's joint record signing? Is it Roque Santa Cruz, Nuno Gomes, or Jordan Rhodes?
2012, I would say... Roque Santa Cruz.
No, it's Jordan Rhodes, mate. Jordan Rhodes.
Signed do you know what? I
August.
Thought, yeah.
I love it when people do that.
What
I was going to say that, but you didn't.
What a letdown.
Jordan Rhodes.
Because you're kind of hoping it would be Roque Santa Cruz. You're kind of hoping that we wouldn't have splashed out $12.5 million on Jordan Rhodes. It's just, you know, it's embarrassing.
Good for you. He scored 27 goals in the Championship that season, and the club finished 17th. It sounds, Ian, like he kept you up, to be honest with you. But,
but then still, he left. He showed no loyalty. Some other mediocre club flashed their ankles at him, and he was off.
He didn't have the Blackburn DNA.
He didn't have Blackburn DNA.
That's right. Chicken. It's chicken DNA, isn't it? That's what it is at the moment. All right, 0 out of 2. The record attendance at Ewood Park, Ian, is 62,225. It was an FA Cup tie in 1929. Who were Blackburn's opponents on that day? Was it, hilarious question, was it Middlesbrough, Bolton or Bradford City?
Right, I'm going to say Bolton because travelling wouldn't have been easy, and they're the local rivals, so it would have been Bolton.
They are. I went through Bolton on the way to Blackburn the last time I went, and
it's known as the Lancashire intestines, Bolton. That's exactly it.
How lovely! It was Bolton. The game finished 1-1. Bolton went on to win the FA Cup that year, knocking Blackburn out in the replay. 1 out of 3. Question 4. How many away teams won in the Premier League on Saturday, Ian? Was it 1, 2 or 3?
2.
No, Ian, it was 1. Spurs, sadly, were the only away side to win on Saturday, beating Brighton 1-0 at the Amex.
Of course, I put Man United in there. And
Yes. The Saturday is one of the clues, really.
Yeah, Always listen to the question.
They beat Brighton 1-0 at the Amex on Saturday in their typically exciting fashion. And question 5. Nathan, you can relax. You've won this one. At Goodison Park, Cristiano Ronaldo came off the bench and scored in the first half. But which Manchester United player did he replace? Was it Marcus Rashford, Anthony Martial or Jadon Sancho?
Do you know what? I've no idea. I fell asleep. I had a lovely bottle of wine with lunch on Sunday, so I missed the start of the match. But I'm going to guess Jadon Sancho.
No, it was Anthony Martial. Came off injured in the 29th minute, having assisted United's first goal. Ian scored 1 out of 5, and Nathan's still sitting proudly. Ian, you've essentially had a terrible one, but you actually get the best questions next time in the draft system that we've devised.
That's the Americanization of sport right there. Right there, no relegation.
God, there's a lot of work that joke is doing there. Anyway, that's it for another episode. As I mentioned, follow us on social media. Thanks to Ian Moore, Nathan Caton, I'm Ian Stone. Thanks for watching. See you next week.